court appointed is meant to be for entertainment purposes and basic legal information only.
Nothing in this podcast should be considered as legal representation nor legal advice.
Only use the knowledge presented herein to dazzle your friends or possibly win bar trivia. Perspective on Legal for Volley. I'm your co-host, Mike Meadows. I'm a lawyer to do.
And I'm your other co-host, Tommy Smurl. And I am just a dude.
We made it through another Thanksgiving.
Just barely. I'm hobbling around. I'm a poor, decrepit old man.
Yeah, you seem to take a couple tumbles during this year's annual family turkey bowl.
I got no balance left. And once I start, I just go down, as poor Elijah will testify to. He broke my fall in one case, unfortunately for him.
Elijah is what, 13?
Yeah, something like that. 13,
he's
14.
In middle school, and
yeah.
Tommy, during our annual family Thanksgiving football game, fumbled the ball, although that may have been a tuck issue, but I think it was a fumble. It was ruled a fumble on the field.
My hand was going forward. It should have been an incomplete pass.
You were not throwing the ball.
But I gave you all the sympathy vote after I crushed Elijah.
Well, Elijah grabbed the ball, and Tommy, who was probably
twice his weight, at least.
Yeah, I would say easily twice his size and weight. Smashed him, and the ball went up into his sternum and knocked the air out of him, and he was having some trouble.
I rolled over him in slow motion. I felt the wind go out of him. I thought it was going to be like one of those cartoons where somebody goes flat, you know, and you have to hold him up, shake him out to get pop him back into shape. I thought he was going to be like that.
Or go get a pump and like you stick a pump like in his butt and
something. Yeah. I felt bad for him. I just heard him. I couldn't even get up. I was laughing so hard, and I couldn't get up, and I hear him back. I go,
Well, the site for this year's Turkey Bowl was at Ritter Park, which is a nice, lovely park in Huntington, West Virginia.
Yeah, and it was really good weather for it and everything else.
It was.
Nice turnout. We had a couple of friends from New Zealand there joining us.
That's right. Guy and Tim.
Guy was a New Zealand Flash.
He was.
He took off like a streak.
He was pretty good, and Tim had some pretty sure hands.
Yeah, he scooped one out of the shoelaces. Guy, he had a pretty good concept of football and even plays fantasy football, so he understood the rules. Tim, his answer was, well, I've played rugby before. Does that count? So he had no concept of the rules or the terminology, so it was really, it was a real learning experience as he gathered in American football.
I liked when there was a series where he was playing center, and he was supposed to snap the ball to you, as quarterback, and he just stood up and threw it, and then he did that like several times in a row. I was like, no, the core concept here is you snap the ball to Tommy.
Well, he also snapped it to Riley, who was standing on the line there with him, and she was like, what is this all about? And he thought it was one of those trickery things. You could pretty much snap it anywhere you wanted.
This is a guy and Tim do a podcast every year with Justin and Travis and Griffin about, was it Paul Blart Mall Cop?
Yeah.
So, yeah, this is Till Death Do Us Blart.
Yeah, they have a podcast of their own called something like Worst Idea Ever.
Yeah, where they watch one movie for a year every day.
Watch the same movie every day for a year and talk about it.
Yeah. Whew. Sounds brutal.
It would be brutal.
Yeah,
but they were great guys. We loved having them in. They came and ate Thanksgiving dinner with us, and they just cracked us up. They were great guys.
But as I was saying, we played the game at Ritter Park, and kind of the tie into today's episode is that parks are available to us in our community because of good zoning laws.
Oh, that's our tie-in. That was a good segue there, Michael. I like that.
Thank you.
Well, all right.
Came up with that all on my own.
That was Sydney-esque.
So, zoning is basically the process where you divide land into different zones, like residential, industrial, commercial, things like that. And certain kinds of development is permitted or prohibited in these different kinds of areas. And what it does is it allows the type of zone to determine whether or not you can build something there or what you can do with this particular piece of land. It's kind of important in this society because it really, although I am kind of a hands-off, laissez-faire kind of guy, I think having good zoning laws is important to develop a a community or a comprehensive land plan for an area.
Yeah, I know that. I mean, I'm familiar with zoning laws as far as downtown because I've heard people that were petitioning like the city council or the board that's from the city council or something like that to change a district's one to from commercial to residence or vice versa.
Yeah.
Something like that because they want to do something different there. But what I've also heard like about West Virginia in general is there's no real zoning laws, I guess, as far as houses, like if you're in a residential area and stuff like that, because they're saying like somebody will build a $500,000 house and then somebody buys a lot next door and puts a double wide on it.
Well, basically zoning is generally controlled by the city or municipality. For example, inside the city limits of Huntington, the city of Huntington controls zoning. Now, outside of the city of Huntington, just in the county, like in Cabell County, there are some Cabell County zoning ordinances, but historically, farther layer of government you get out, so basically going from like municipality, county, state, the amount of zoning restrictions gets fewer and fewer. And the reason is because the rationale is that you want your own smallest layer of government to basically decide what kind of land can be used for what, because they have a better grasp on what needs to be where. You wouldn't want somebody like in Martinsburg, which is really far away from here, having some sort of the same kind of zoning input as here in Huntington, which is like, what, 5.5 hours away?
At least.
Yeah. So, I mean, you really can't have a one-size-fits-all type thing for the entire state, especially in this region, because Huntington is fairly flat as far as West Virginia goes, but some areas are just up and down. So
sure.
you can't really do that. So it's best left up to the smaller government municipalities really on how you're going to do that.
Well, I know in some of the real rural areas, I mean, you've got the road follows the river.
Yeah.
And then it's straight up on each side. So you've got the river, the road, and a hill straight up on each side.
Yeah.
So, I mean, it'd be hard to zone anything along through there.
Well,
as far as what could go in.
And it's like you said, zoning does help protect and maintain property values. Because if you build a very expensive house, you want to have other expensive houses near you, because that kind of adds to the value of your house. Whereas you don't want other less expensive houses kind of bringing down the value of your house, because that's one of the things they look at, like comprehensives, or was it comprehensives? Whenever they're looking at other houses in the, or comparatives or something.
Comparative sounds right, I think.
Yeah.
Because, they'll do that when you're trying to sell your house.
Yeah.
They'll look up houses in the same type neighborhood, same type price zone, you know, price range as yours and things like that, and see what's selling, how long it was on the market and stuff like that.
Yep. So, I mean, zoning is a pretty good idea. It keeps your residents safe from, say, you know, you build your dream house and then they decide to build a sewage plant next to it. You know, for them, well, I guess that'd be a kind of government thing, but private sewage plant, because a lot of people build those, I guess.
They could. You never know. If there's money in it, somebody will do it.
Now, one of the hallmarks of zoning is that
there's money in them, our sludge.
One of the hallmarks of zoning is that they have different designations for the zones. Now, this is going to be vary greatly between different cities that have these zoning and counties that have these different laws. There's not like a global thing. So, you know, what is a certain designation in one place could mean something different in another, even though they say that they're called the same thing. So it's very important to know what the actual law is in the area where you're looking to build or identify what the proper zoning is. But there's a couple of things I think that probably transcend, and these are some just kind of generic designations. So a lot of times you'll see a C designation that stands for commercial. You'll see an R designation that stands for residential. And there might be a designation when it says like R1, R2, R3, R4.
Is that the kind of
residential? Yeah, like R1 might be single family homes. R2 might be duplexes. R3,
you know. Apartment buildings.
Yeah, whatever. And then, you know.
R4 is high rises or something.
R2, D2 is like moisturizer.
He's droids. A robot.
Yeah. So there could be different designations. And there might even be like, you know, certain ones that are just for agriculture. Like this is farmland. We designated this as a farmland zoning area. So we only want farms over here. You know, just lots of different things. And the way they want to do this is because it makes sense to have kind of a structured idea about what can be built where.
Well, I mean, you want to live in a neighborhood or, you know, do you want to live in between two hardware stores? So, I mean, I guess that makes sense that you would go through there and designate that so you can establish neighborhoods, or you can put all the businesses in the same spot. You know, you may not want a business going in next door to you.
That's right. Now, when zoning really became super, super kind of popular, I think, was maybe back in the 70s and 80s. It started becoming really prevalent everywhere. Although it does have its historical roots dating, you know, way back, as you might imagine. It's kind of a common sense idea. But the trend now is actually more towards limited mixed use areas. So there's always been kind of traditionally limited mixed use areas, like the guy who has some sort of shop, like a seamstress has a shop, and then over top they might rent out apartments above their establishment. So that would be, you would call that kind of like a mixed use area. So you have a business in one hand, then you have apartments over top.
Yeah, in the old days, a lot of times people would own a store on the bottom floor, uh-huh. and then they would live upstairs in the top floor. They actually lived at their business.
Now, the trend in the 70s and 80s, is, and the one thing about the United States is we're very, I guess, blessed to have a lot of land, so you can kind of build out. You don't necessarily have to build up. And so what happened was there was urban sprawl. Mm-hmm. And so basically, you kind of got away from these mixed-use areas where it was just like, well, we're going to put all our businesses here, and then all of our residences here, which basically that makes it more of a car-driven type economy where you have to drive your car somewhere to go there.
Well, it also came about with the development of the mall.
That's right.
built the malls, and there's where all the stores went.
Yeah, in the 80s, you build the mall kind of outside the city where people lived, and they had to drive to it. So now the idea is, rather than build these with this urban sprawl and build these things farther out, what you want to do is you might build a retail center, but then there might be like homes that are kind of incorporated in apartments or condos and things like that. Grocery stores, hardware stores, basically anything you might need, almost to build like a little mini community right there in this little area.
Well, that's one of the pushes in our hometown in Huntington, is that they had basically the downtown kind of died out because the mall went up on the outskirts of town, mm-hmm. and everybody did all their shopping out at the mall, which is outside the city limits. And so all the downtown store owners mostly went out of business. And so we had all kinds of vacant buildings, and everything was going downhill. And so then they started this renovation program, put in new places. Marshall moved an art school, Pullman Square opened.
Yeah.
Now they're renovating all these old storefronts and turning them into condos and stuff.
Yeah.
And they're not cheap condos either.
No.
They're nice luxury condos, and they're basically encouraging senior living because they're saying everything is right here within a couple of block radius. You can go to the movies, you can go shopping, you can, you know, go get coffee at Starbucks, you know, go to all the restaurants are down there.
The thing about also when they moved the mall outside the city limits is that hurt the tax base for the city too, because they weren't getting the tax revenue on
absolutely.
All those businesses.
So. Yeah, Barbersville, where they went to, is rich out there now. They can build anything they want to build.
Yeah. Now, the mixed-use idea shopping center that I had in mind, one that's kind of close to here, is in Easton. I don't know if you've ever been to Easton in Columbus.
Yeah, we've been there.
So when that first was developed, it was basically just kind of an outdoor shopping mall with not much around it. But since then, if you notice, if you go there, I mean, they've built homes, apartments, everything all around it. And then there's grocery stores. I mean, there's everything you need in that one little community right there.
Right.
It's like its own little
town. And lots of hotels, too.
Yeah.
Because people go up there and spend the weekend so they can go there and shop.
Yeah.
And they'll spend the night there and do that.
Yeah. So that's, I think that's a really kind of a success story for a mixed use type zoning type area.
They have a cheesecake factory too.
They do. They do have a cheesecake factory.
I could go there and just eat in that place till I blew up.
Yeah. I think probably that is one of the most caloric heavy places to eat ever. Like even the things that you think are kind of healthy there are just like super dense.
They have like 55 different flavored cheesecakes or something like that too.
Well, it's not even just a cheesecake. It's like the entrees there are just they're
everything's deep fried, you know?
Yeah. Including yourself after you walk out of there.
Yeah, yeah. I'll have the deep fried butter, please.
Speaking of gluttony, we had a tailgate yesterday for the Marshall football game, and our contribution was we went to Chick-fil-A and got a large platter of Chick-fil-A nuggets. I think we got the medium one, which came with about 120 nuggets, they said, and it feeds about 10 people.
Did any of them make it to the tailgate while they were in your clutches?
Well, I'm very proud to say that actually we did not eat any before we got to the tailgate.
Really?
Yeah, it was amazing. But I did kind of loosely keep track of how many nuggets I ate during the course of this tailgate and football game and halftime. And I came in at the number around 40.
40 nuggets, huh?
Yeah. Mm. I didn't eat dinner last night.
Well, no wonder with all those nuggets.
I didn't wake up this morning. I wasn't hungry.
Yeah.
I'm still not hungry.
I can understand that. All those nuggets, you better hope they don't start swimming upstream.
But I'll tell you what, I swear I think I could have eaten more.
Oh, man.
I love some Chick-fil-A nuggets.
I guess so. I've never been a real nugget fan.
Really?
I'm not sure what part of the chicken the nugget comes from.
Yeah, it can be any part.
I know what my idea of what the nuggets are, but I'm hoping that's not what people are eating.
I took a class in law school, getting back to our topic, based on on land use
planning. Let's talk more about nuggets.
On land use planning.
Yes.
And it was kind of a class that basically dealt with only zoning and things like that and how you plan and develop an area. Because there's a lot.
Oh, you played Sims.
Yeah. Yeah.
Is that what you did in college? You played Sims and that was your lesson in planning? Isn't that what that's all about?
It kind of
planning
is.
Planning a community?
People love those kinds of games.
Yeah.
It's pretty interesting.
Build your own utopia.
Yeah. But this class, we also had to do a paper on. I did a paper which dealt with easements and basically the right of the people to have access to the ocean for like beach accesses, because those are essentially easements.
Sure.
And there's a lot of law, and Surfrider, the foundation, is really big into this litigation. There's a lot of law which protects these easements to make sure that people will always have access to the ocean and the beach in residential areas. So
the best example of that, if you want to see it, is in the movie Summer Rental.
Yes.
That one, when he gets in that house and all those people start pouring by him, that just cracks me up.
Oh, it's so funny.
It's like, that'd be me. That'd be my house.
Well, the thing is that I think this is a kind of a good example. That was probably the only beach access around for miles, that one.
Right.
If you had them every block, it wouldn't be that big of a deal. So
yes,
it's always better to have more, I think.
Well, we discovered that when we were at the beach one year, is we thought, why is it so crowded right here by our house? And you go down the beach some, and it's not that crowded.
Yeah.
We finally figured out that's what it was. That was the public access was right there where our house was. We thought, maybe that's why this house didn't cost quite as much as some of the others.
Yeah.
Because you got inundated. I mean, there would be busloads during the week. There were actually kids coming there, because we were there when school was back in. They were bringing kids to the beach.
Yeah, and there's a lot of zoning law that goes into building right there at the ocean, too, because there's different coastal zones and things like that, and there's all kinds of extra building requirements as well if you're going to build that close. And there's a lot of a push, especially in some beach towns, to keep it more of the residential feel of the town, so they don't want to have commercial establishments right there on the beach. They want to keep it so there are these, you know, people's houses there.
Well, I don't know exactly how it's worded, but I know this, when we visited Hilton Head before, they've got some kind of, I'm sure it comes under zoning laws, about signage and stuff like that. It's got to be so far back off the road, or it's got to be natural. It's got to be like wood or something. You can't have big, bright neon signs out by the road.
Can't be higher than one story.
Yeah, yeah. They've got some real strict things to try to keep it more of a rustic feel or a natural feel or something that they're going for, so it's not all bright and neon and gaudy.
Yeah. Keep it classy.
Keep a classic feel. And they name the areas the Plantations and stuff like that, because that's classier, I guess.
I guess so. Well, I got some other examples in movies to talk about with regards to zoning, but I think before we do that, we might have some people on the docket today for some motions.
Well, we actually do. We have one that we talked about for no reason last week, and now we got a reason to talk about them this week, and that's our good friends at Cameron Hughes Wines.
So if you've listened to us before, which if you're listening to us today, you probably have, you've heard us maybe talk about Cameron Hughes Wine.
Absolutely. As a matter of fact, we had some Cameron Hughes Wine on hand for the Thanksgiving holidays.
Yes.
And between the reds and the whites that we had, everybody was extremely satisfied with it. They went on and on. Where did you get this? And I said, you know, it's funny you should ask, because I know exactly where you get this.
Yeah. I actually have an elk roast in the slow cooker right now. And I'm really looking forward to having some delicious Cameron Hughes wine paired with it tonight. It's going to be delicious.
What kind of wine goes with elk? I've never considered that.
Well, it's a red meat. It's like a beef. So?
So?
It's Cabernet or something like that.
Okay.
Yeah.
Sounds reasonable to me.
Yeah. It's going to be delicious. And I'm salivating just thinking about it.
Well, and this week especially is a Cyber Week special. And that's exactly what Cameron Hughes wants us to talk about. You've heard about how they have the relationship with the super high-end wineries around the world, and they buy their wines and sell direct to you. So it's always highly rated in the wine press with amazing scores and top-notch accolades.
So right now, there is an unbelievable Cyber Week deal for you. The deal is insane.
You're crazy!
These savings are crazy!
You won't believe! It's big deal right now, right now, right now!
And it's just in time, so you can have wine to take with you to the holiday parties. You always got to bring wine to a party.
They are offering 30% off and free shipping when you buy a case. And it comes with free gift bags. Now, how's that for an amazing offer?
It's the best deal of the year, but it's this week only, and it ends this Friday.
This Friday.
And that's, the wine won't last either. I mean, you got to get on this. These are limited quantities. You got to get it while it's getting good.
When it's gone for good.
That's right.
So you must go online and buy it now.
It's really a no-brainer to try the phenomenal wine right now. You get up to an additional 30% off and free shipping.
So instead of getting a $150 bottle of wine for $30, this weekend you can get it for even less and free shipping. And when you think about how heavy wine is, that's a good deal.
Absolutely. So it's 30% off any wine and free shipping on a case and free gift bags on your order.
Now this is a fantastic deal just in time for you to stock up for the holidays. This wine will not disappoint. This is the best deal they are offering this season, and it's for 1 week only, expiring at midnight, Friday, December 1st.
And right now, again, you can only get up to 30% off and free shipping if you use our code COURT at checkout.
So go to chwine.com. That's chwine.com. Shop for amazing and award-winning luxury wines. Enter our special code COURT. That's right. Enter the special code COURT. And get any wine for 30% off and free shipping.
Don't wait. This offer is only available until midnight, Friday, December 1st. This wine will sell out fast, especially with this incredible offer.
That's chwine.com. Enter code COURT. Tell them Mike and Tommy sent you.
And say hi to Cam.
He's a good guy.
So one instance that I, when I think about zoning, this is kind of a strange movie you might not think about. I mean, you had your summer rental, John Candy story. I always think about the movie Up.
The movie Up? Oh, yeah, where they squeezed him out there.
That's right. They built these, a mall on either side of him, and mm-hmm. had this one little building, there's one little home right there in the middle. So I always think about that. I was like, I wonder what that area was zoned as.
Well, they probably changed it, but it was a grandfather clause in there.
He was definitely a grandfather.
Oh, yeah. He was keeping that house in memory of his wife.
I don't want to talk about this movie too much more because I'm going to start crying.
Squirrel!
That movie had this was so sad. So now, talking about zoning, one thing that kind of goes hand in hand with zoning, you might not know this, is HOAs, or homeowner associations.
I know a little bit about homeowner associations.
So basically, an HOA is kind of like a contract that all the people who purchase in a certain neighborhood agree to be kind of governed by. There's certain rules and regulations. Think about it like an extra layer of government. So basically, you have your federal government, which is the United States government. Then you're governed by your state government. So we would have, like, you know, West Virginia. Then you would have your county government, Cabell. Then you would have your city government, Huntington. And then if you lived in an HOA, you'd have another little layer of government there. So basically, it's kind of good and bad.
It can be good. I mean, the premise of it is to protect your property values and keep everything up to standards and
right.
and things like that so that you can resell your house and recoup your money when you go to sell
And these that. HOAs might have some nice amenities, too. Like, they might have, like, a pool, tennis courts, things like that, like extra things.
And you pay a fee so yeah. you can keep those up because they have to be kept up. Everything yeah. costs money. Nothing's for free in this world.
That's right. But the bad thing is that They kind of control every single little thing you can do with regard to your house and your property.
And depending on who the person is in charge of them, they sometimes get carried away with their self-importance.
Yeah, that's true. They could even, I've seen where they define the color of mulch you can use in your planters, the kind of trees you can plant, all kinds of other small little things you might not even think about. So, I mean, now, it might add to the entire aesthetic of the community if it's really governed like this, but it kind of goes against the whole notion of America and my property, if you think about it.
Well, I remember the first time that I became aware of it, there's an area here. It's actually not in Huntington. It's outside the city limits. But they had a zoning HOA requirement against fences.
Mm-hmm.
You couldn't fence off your property anywhere.
Yeah.
And so this family put in a swimming pool and wanted to put up a privacy fence around it.
Yeah.
And, you know, most times you do insurance reasons, you want a fence around your pool.
Well, actually, you have to now in most places.
So, or maybe the rule was, maybe what they could put up was a privacy fence. You put up a fence, but you couldn't put up a privacy fence because mm-hmm. they didn't want to obstruct any views anywhere. So anyway, they put up a privacy fence around their pool, and then the other people, the HOA sued them to take their fence down. So there was a big thing back and forth about that. But the main reason that they had wanted to do that, their daughter had come down. I don't think that's the proper term. But anyway, she had cancer. Mm-hmm. And so she was fighting cancer. Well, she did end up beating it. But of course, you know, as it happens, you know, she lost her hair and things like that. But this was a way she was building up her strength to exercise and swim in the pool and stuff like that. And that's what they want to do. But at the same time, she didn't want people looking at her back there. She wanted her privacy while she was doing it. And that's the main reason they put the fence up, was for their daughter to recover from this.
That seems like a legitimate reason.
Yeah, but the HOA was suing them over it. So, of course, a lot of us were outraged over that. And their family were personal friends of ours. So we got involved in that to a point. But eventually they got to keep their fence.
Yeah, now a lot of times if you have something like that, you can actually go in front of a zoning board and try to get like a variance or something that allows you to have something that goes outside the scope of it. And it's usually for good cause shown. You know, one example might be like the Hilton Head thing you're talking about, that signs can only be so tall. Well, maybe if there's some sort of shrubbery that's right in front of the building and you need to have a little bit higher so you can actually see the sign, you know, it might go a foot or two over what they say. You might go before the city and say, hey, we have this shrub here. In order for the sign to be visible, it needs to be, you know, 1 or 2 feet higher. We're not really looking to change things. We want to keep the whole aesthetic the same, but we just need a little bit of a accommodation here. Mm-hmm. And then it'd be up to them to decide whether or not they want to grant that variance for that. So,
yeah, well, I think they'd asked that HOA and gave them the reason, and they just said no, because if we do it for you, then everybody else will have an excuse.
Right. And that's one thing too. With HOAs, you're a lot less likely to get those kinds of things. Although it depends on this whole, you know, inner workings in politics as to, you know, who your friends are inside the community. If you have somebody who's on the board, they might say, oh, well, you know, so-and-so, they're good people, and I know the reason they want to have this, and we're going to go ahead and grant the variance for this. Whereas if they didn't send over, you know, cookies that last holiday season, they might not get that variance. So
that's true.
But I mean, I think with actual cities and counties and things like that, it's a bit more less politicky type things for the most part.
You know, it's funny. I think that I don't know that whether this would come under the HOA or whether it would come under a spite fence that we've talked about before.
Yeah.
But the rumor has it that that's the reason that retired doctor attacked Rand Paul a few weeks ago. Remember when he was attacked in his yard while cutting his grass and broke 6 ribs and everything? Mm-hmm. They say that he was trying to sell his house. This doctor was trying to sell his house. And Rand Paul's had planted on his property some big trees that have grown up, and they blocked the view of the lake. Oh. They had a nice view of the lake, and those trees blocked the view of the lake. And he has been unable to sell his house for the amount that he thinks it's worth because he lost the view of the lake. And they think that's what's behind why he attacked him.
and probably some sort of like indigenous protected tree that you can't cut down.
So you never know.
HOAs have all kinds of strange rules. And like we talked about, it's mainly so they want to keep things in a certain order. For example, in Florida, there are a lot of HOAs, mm-hmm. a lot more than around here. Mm-hmm. In Huntington, Cabell County, there's maybe a handful of them that I can even think of. Not very many at all. But down in Florida, there's a ton of them. And they're actually, it's kind of a big business. There's actually attorneys that specialize in HOA law because there's laws that govern it. And it's very, there's just a lot of it.
And there's no oversight board per se that governs what HOAs can do or can't do. You just got to go to court.
Yeah, for the most part. There are certain statutory language where they have to follow different things. And they are subject to the same kind of quasi sunshine law type things where they have to give you basically open up their books to everybody. So, mm-hmm. I mean, that's kind of the same thing. It's like a quasi type thing, a quasi government type entity, I guess you might say.
Quasimodo.
That's right. Big hump on their back. Is that what you're talking about?
Yeah.
Okay.
That's right.
So this one OHA in particular had a rule which stated that you could not park a vehicle in your driveway. You basically had to use your garage.
Right.
Well, you know, in this day and age, most people don't actually use their garage for parking their cars, and they do a lot of other stuff in there. They might have a workshop in there. They might have ping pong tables. I mean, just the garages these days aren't necessarily just used for cars.
Right.
Some people do, but a lot of people don't. So they got a letter from their HOA saying they were in violation because they weren't parking their cars in their garage. They were using their driveway. Now, it seems a little unreasonable if you ask me, but that's just me thinking like, hey, what's going on here? But we read the HOA bylaws and said basically that you could park your car in the driveway if you already had two vehicles in your garage. Well, they did not define what a vehicle meant in this standard HOA scheme.
So you park two bikes in there?
So basically, yeah. We looked up, and under Florida law, a bicycle is considered a vehicle. So sent a letter back saying, hey, we have three vehicles in here. So we're going to park in the driveway and whatever. So, and then in order for them to change that, they would have to amend the entire bylaws of their HOA, which was they're just like, oh, you know what?
To define a vehicle as an automobile?
Yeah. So, but anyway, it was a kind of a clever way to get around it. So, you know, well, I mean, they could have gone ahead and defined what a vehicle was, but they used some vague language and thought they were trying to be clever, probably.
Yeah.
So,
well, I can understand that to an extent. When we built our house there a little over 4 years ago, there is an HOA. I can't find anybody that would care one way or another what we did. Like, in other words, some of the language said we had to have the plans for our house approved by the architectural committee
right
before we could build our house. Well, there's only five other houses. Five other houses there. So I went around to each one knocking on the door, asking them, are you on the architectural committee? None of them claimed to be, that they weren't home. And the ones that were home said, no. I said, well, I'm supposed to get my plans okayed. Who do I go to? And the only name I got, they gave me the name of a lady, and they said her father owned all this land at one time and sold it for the subdivision. So I guess maybe her. Well, I wasn't going to take it to some old lady that didn't even live up there and ask her, did my house meet your plans? So, you know, we just went ahead and built our house, decided it was good enough, you know, and we built it. Now, there were things in there about you had to be so many feet from the curb. Your front of your house had to be so many feet back from the curb.
Right.
You could only be so close on your sidelines with other properties. You could only be so many feet within your side borders of your property. It did have one about parking cars. It said that you couldn't park cars on the street.
Yeah.
They had to be in your garage or your driveway. You couldn't leave them. It had some kind of wording in there, like if somebody was visiting you for a week, that's not a problem, but it couldn't be a permanent thing that you parked a car on the street every night. And right. I appreciate that to a point. I mean, that really is a problem. There's some of our streets that we have to drive through to get to our neighborhood, and everybody parks on the road. And it's like a one-lane road because there's so many cars parked out there. It's really a pain. I try to avoid that street whenever possible.
Yeah. It's a little tricky.
Yeah.
I was coming up one of those roads, and there was a car parked on one side but not the other. So I kind of got over towards the middle, and some lady was coming at me in the other direction. She had plenty of room to get all the way to the right. Well, she didn't really want to.
Yeah.
I was like, come on. Give me a little room here.
Yeah. I don't understand. All these people, they have driveways and they have garages, and all of them park on the street.
Yeah.
And I mean, two and three cars out there. It's a disaster trying to drive up and down the street. So I understand that.
But yeah, that was one kind of clever workaround to an HOA. Another case I had, and this was kind of the genesis of this entire case. It's pretty funny. Like, HOAs have a lot of politics to them. But in Florida, mosquitoes are obviously a problem.
Right. They fog for them and stuff like that.
They do. There's actually mosquito control boards, which are their own kind of government entity.
You know, there's a phone that claims to have an app that will keep mosquitoes away from you.
Really?
Yeah. Or something I saw advertised, and it comes with some kind of app that you can turn on, and it emits a high frequency thing that supposedly mosquitoes try to avoid.
I'm not buying it.
You're not buying the phone, or you're not buying the app works?
I'm not buying the app or the app works. Well, in this one particular HOA, there was a pond, and someone had ordered a certain type of fish to be put into the to be dumped into the pond because that was supposed to eat the mosquito larvae. Mm-hmm. And also, there was a debate over whether the problem was the mosquitoes or something called no-see-ums.
I've heard of no-see-ums. I've experienced no-see-ums when I was down in Waycross.
Now, no-see-ums are basically they're known as biting midges, mm-hmm. and they're kind of small flies, and they exist in kind of aquatic environments. So the whole debate was whether or not these fish would actually benefit fighting the no-see-ums. And there were some people in the HOA that live closer to the pond that were very passionate about these midges and the fish and the mosquitoes and the things that were dumped in there.
They didn't want them bead?
Well, no, they wanted, really were pushing for these things.
Oh.
And then the other people that live farther away that really didn't have these problems didn't really care so much. And it created this huge, like, almost civil war in this HOA. Between different warring factions, which led to a this 2-week-long defamation trial I had over this thing. And this was back in 2013. We actually had the trial. And I will tell you that right now I'm out of the case, but for whatever reason, I still get notifications when things are filed. They are still arguing over legal fees and whatnot in this case.
Man.
And now, it was decided in 2013. It had been filed like in 2009, and they are still arguing about legal fees.
That's unbelievable.
Yeah, and all these people live in the same HOA, and I mean, and these HOAs can become very contentious environments.
Well, they can, and there was a story I read about that said that there was a guy that lived in a community with an HOA, and he had, whether he bought it or made it, I'm not sure, it didn't make clear, but he took a wooden pallet, and it was painted in the form of an old colonial flag. So, and he stood it up outside as a decoration in his yard, you know, it leaned up against his house, and I guess the rest of their decor was kind of colonial-type period. This was in Colorado, and the homeowners association sent him a nasty letter and said, "You got to take that down." And he said, "No, I'm not going to take it down." So they threatened to sue him. So he put a big sign out in his yard that said, "If you are thinking of moving to this community," naming the community, "you should think again. The homeowners association will target you and make your life hell," or something to that extent.
Yeah.
So then they filed another suit wanting him to take the sign down. So they were suing him for it. So they eventually, it did go to court, or it did, they did have a trial date set, but they ended up settling out of court because they basically told him, said, "Look, there's a Colorado statute that says you're allowed to fly any kind of flag you want to fly."
Yeah.
And so this basically was a flag that he was displaying, even though it was painted on a wooden pallet.
Yeah.
So they said, "You're infringing on his First Amendment rights. If you weren't infringing on his First Amendment rights, he wouldn't have put the sign up. So if you allow the first one, then the second one goes away."
Yeah.
So they basically settled that if he could keep the flag pallet up as long as he took the sign down. So he agreed, and they settled it before it went to trial.
What a huge waste.
I know.
I mean, the only people that probably came out happy were the lawyers who got to make money for their attorney's fees.
For something that should have never even been done. But that's where these HOAs get carried away. And here's something else I read that I was extremely surprised about. The guy was writing in asking questions, and he said they have a master HOA, and they have 10 sub-HOAs. 10 separate sub-HOAs within his community.
Wow.
And they each have their own governing bodies.
Jeez, that sounds
How do you keep up with that? And they had sub-HOAs that were suing the master HOAs for what they thought they wanted to do that the master HOA said they couldn't.
I mean, I could see, I guess, if you have an HOA that has like 10,000 people in a development, like it's just a massive HOA, maybe you might need some smaller representation, I guess, but daggone, that seems like kind of...
That's just going to be confusing.
Oh, so much extra government.
But this guy's question was, he said that the master HOA told him that he had to have a signed contract. He wanted to put up a fence, and met certain specifications, you know, it had all specifications there. And so before he could do it, he had to submit a signed contract with all the specifications and proof of insurance, that the contractor had proof of insurance and proof of workers' comp and all that kind of stuff.
Yeah.
And once he submitted that, then it could. Well, his question was, well, what if I do that and submit the contract and then they turn it down and I've already signed a contract with this contractor? Now I owe him money for it, and I can't build that fence because they've turned it down.
Yeah.
They said that shouldn't be all right. And so they said, well, technically, yes, you're correct. But what you do to protect yourself is you have to put in your contract with that contractor.
Contingency.
Contingent upon approval by that board.
Yeah. Simple answer. But
yeah,
it's crazy.
Yeah, you wouldn't think about that ahead of time, you know.
No.
So what if you did go out and you got that contract thinking this is what I have to do, and then you're stuck with paying the guy for doing nothing because your fence didn't get approved?
Now, I'll tell you one kind of real scary story that happened. This lady came to my office, it's probably about 6 years ago in Florida, and I mentioned something earlier about the color of mulch.
Well, right.
She wanted to use a certain color of mulch in her planter at her house, and she lived in an HOA. And they said no. They had some sort of rule that said, no, you can't use this color. You have to use this other color, because they wanted everybody to have the same, I guess. And so she said, well, I don't like that color. I want to use my color and whatever. Screw you. I'm going to do what I want to do. She put down the wrong color mulch and they fined her for it. And she didn't change it. So they fined her again. And so basically it kept adding up and it got to the point where it was probably about $2,000 in fines for her using this wrong mulch. And she was just thumbing her nose at it. So basically they turned it over to their HOA lawyer, who in turn went and filed suit. And basically she came to my office and said, hey, now they don't want this, $2,000. Now they want like attorney's fees and this, that on top of it. And I went through and looked, and this was during like the kind of the first consult. And I went through the HOAs. It was pretty clear that she had violated it, not done what she was supposed to. Mm-hmm. And then and that she had not paid it. And so the bad thing in Florida is that if you go against your HOA and you lose, Florida has a very specific law which gives the HOA the power to sell your property to satisfy that judgment.
Now, can they collect attorney's fees as well?
Yes.
Wow.
So basically, this lady, I had to tell her, I said, look, I was like, you are playing with fire here by doing this. I said, you can lose your entire house over this mulch issue. And she, was like, well, I want to fight it all the way. It's not right. Da, 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 da. I was like, look, here's how much it's going to cost for you to hire me to litigate this all the way through. My advice to you would be to take that money. Don't pay me that money. Just write them a check and end this right now.
And change your mulch, lady.
Yeah, and change your mulch. And
just put another layer over it. You don't even have to remove what's there.
And she wasn't very happy with me. And I said, this is my opinion.
We'll do what you want. It's your money.
Yeah. So
thing about money, we don't have to discuss the color. It's all green.
Yeah. She never came back, but I don't know what happened. So, But anyway, that's the scary thing about those HOA things, especially in Florida, I know, is that they can, it's like a mortgage. They can basically force you to sell your house. So there's not many things that can do that.
But that's I guess the thing is if you're going to move into an area that has an HOA, you better read through it.
Yeah.
And if there's things that you don't like about it, then don't buy the house. Don't sit there and think, well, I'll just do whatever I want to do, or I'll fight that battle when I come to it. No, if there's a problem, you need to find that out ahead of time. I mean, like at our house, I can understand, because your regular cedar mulch that most people will use, it's almost the same color as my house.
Yeah.
So if I put that down with my house, it'd be like, wow, that doesn't look good at all. It looks like the house is melting or something.
I need something that makes it pop.
Yeah. So I use black mulch on mine. Mm-hmm. And the black mulch really looks good against that color. So if somebody told me you have to use that cedar mulch, that would piss me off. I don't want to use that. My house looks like it's melting,
The one thing too, if you are going to buy a house in an HOA and you have like when you buy a house, you actually get under contract or whatnot before closing. A lot of times there'll be a special rider that has to be attached to a contract if you're buying and selling a house in an HOA. And the rider will essentially say, I've received a copy of the restrictions and I've read through them for this very reason. They want people to understand exactly what it is they're buying into.
Yeah.
And it's actually grounds to void a contract. I've used that trick a couple times to get people out of contracts when they're trying to buy a house. They haven't been given a copy of the HOA rules and regulations. So it's like, hey, they don't even know what they're buying. We don't have a meeting of the minds here.
Yeah.
And that's essentially the reasoning behind that. So
when I was buying my property, the guy just said, hey, I happen to have an old copy of the HOA. Do you want a copy of it? And I was like, sure.
Yeah.
But I mean, if he hadn't given it to me, I don't know where else I would have gotten it.
Yeah. And for the most part, I think in your situation, it doesn't really matter.
Yeah. I don't think mine is really, it's one of those things. It's like, it's a go by. It's like,
you don't pay any fees.
They'll
right?
frown on you. Yeah. No, there's no fees. Cause there's nothing, there's no joint thing. They turn that now there used to be, but they turned the street over to the city.
Right.
So now it's not a private road anymore. So there's really nothing to pay for that's going on up there.
Yeah. And most of these HOAs that really are active, they have their own bank accounts, they have boards. They'll actually be entities which are filed in the state too. It'll be like, such and such homeowners association, and they'll have like who the president is and all that. I mean, it's like a regular company.
Yeah, Dad was the president of his out there for a long time.
Oh, yeah?
Yeah, he got tired of fooling with it, but
yeah,
he was the one out there, and they all had to pay fees, and mostly it was used to keep the roads clear when it snowed.
Yeah.
They would pay someone to come plow the roads, and then they'd take the money that accumulated through the year and throw a Christmas party for everybody in the subdivision to come to the Christmas party. But that was about it. They collect all the money for that.
Yeah, and that area about there, that's about the only area in this town I know of that is kind of like an HOA like that.
Yeah.
So it's one of the few. But yeah, it seems like even that, it's a very, very non-cumbersome type HOA, I think.
Yeah.
So.
Well, there were still some problems. There were some things I know that they got into that people had to maintain property. Some people that just owned lots still, and they had to be maintained to a certain level. And if they didn't, you sent them a letter. And if they didn't do it, then they were charged with fines.
Yeah.
And so I know they did get into some heated discussions over that kind of stuff.
Yeah. Well, I think that's going to bring us to Legal briefs is the part of the show where we talk about different terms that we discussed. And usually it's a quiz where I ask Tommy if he remembers what it means.
And I'm kind of Kreskin-like in that I know all these things. Kreskin wasn't known for knowing things, though. He was a hypnotist type guy. So that was a wrong reference.
Yes, it was the wrong reference.
I'm just like a guy that remembers a lot of stuff.
Yes, you're just like a guy who remembers a lot of stuff.
Did I hypnotize you? Are you repeating after me?
The first term, I'm going to throw a bit of a curveball.
Give me your lawyer tree with the money growing on it.
No-see-um. What is a no-see-um?
A no-see-um, that's a little bug that will bite you like a mosquito, but the difference is you don't see him. That's why they call him a no-see-um. It's a little bitty bug. It's often called a midge.
That's right. In Scotland, they're also called no-see-ums, sandflies, punkies, and sandflies in Australia.
Sandflies in Australia?
Yeah.
Well, now, I've seen sandflies. They have green eyes. Those are actual flies, and they bite you down on the beach.
Yeah.
Those things will bite you, and they hurt. But now, no-see-ums, you don't ever see those. They're just like the black is in their little head of a pin size.
You know what's really good to put on for no-see-ums? Skin so soft.
Oh, really?
Yeah. The moisturizer stuff, they don't like that.
Oh, Michael, and not only that, you're approachably soft.
That's right. The next term is zoning. What is zoning?
Zoning is where a municipality decides what they want in certain areas, and it can be commercial, residential, or business or something like that.
Yeah.
And so they can zone the different things so that you have, for whatever benefits the municipality, tell you what you can do there.
Yeah, it falls under the general theory of kind of land use planning on how to plan your land.
Or your Sims.
And I didn't actually explain this, but I'm going to ask you anyway.
Oh, no.
I mentioned that you can get attorney's fees in these HOA lawsuits.
Right.
Now, is that just because you win the case? Is there another reason why you're entitled to attorney's fees? Do you always get attorney's fees if you win your case? Is my question.
No, you don't always.
What's the scenario where you get attorney's fees?
Probably when they bring the suit against you and you win, then you get attorney's fees.
Well,
if you brought it against them, you probably don't get your attorney's fees.
You get attorney's fees. That's not correct.
Oh.
But this is not a fair one. You get attorney's fees if it's written into the contract. Mm-hmm. The contract has an attorney's fees provision.
Oh, in the HOA contract.
Yep.
Okay.
Or if it's some other designation by law or code statute that says that, hey, if you win this type of lawsuit, you get attorney's fees back.
Yeah, so, like what was the one we talked about? Was it last week or the week before where there were ones where you get your legal fees if you were wrong?
I don't know. I can't remember.
One of them that we talked about.
Yeah, I do recall that vaguely, but I don't know. There's lots of different ones.
I don't know what we talked about last week.
But yeah, you don't just get attorney's fees just because you win. So it's a common misconception.
Oh, it was on the liens.
Yeah.
It was on the liens is what it was.
Yep, on liens.
Lean on me. I had to think of the title. Lean on me when you're not whole, and I'll make you whole.
Okay. Yeah, but this is the episode. No more questions. That was it. We're done.
Man, that was a pretty abrupt cutoff.
Yeah, I'm done with it. I'm over it.
Well, I need to have an HOA that says you've got to segue out of this better than that.
I segued into it very nicely.
Yeah, but you flopped at the end.
I did.
Yeah.
Well, that's going to do it for legal briefs. That's all of them. Even, I won't count that surprise attorney's fees question. That was a bonus question.
Well, I still got 2 out of 3, though.
You did.
It wasn't too bad.
Yeah. 2 out of 3 ain't bad.
That's what meatloaf says. I started calling him meatball. 2 out of 3 ain't bad.
Is that a song?
Yeah. You never heard that song? Two out of three ain't bad. That's probably his best song ever.
I thought Dashboard Lights was his best song ever.
I want you, I need you, but there ain't no way I'm ever going to love you. Two out of three ain't bad.
What is it again? I want you.
I need you, but I'm never going to love you. Two out of three ain't bad.
That sounds like a horrible, horrible thing.
But you have to listen to the whole song. It's very emotional. For a big old burly guy, he's a very emotional singer.
He is. I guess.
Thanks to everybody for listening, and thanks to MCRB for use of their song, Doctor, Lawyer, Indian Chief.
And thanks to the McElroy Stable of Podcasts for the use of their recording studio. Their podcasts include Mabim Bam, Sawbones, and Still Buffering, as well as many other fine offerings. And please, take the time to rate and review us on iTunes, especially if you liked us. If you didn't, well then, not so much.
You're not supposed to say that.
You always edit that out though, right?
Usually. Good. This has been Court Appointed. I'm Mike Meadows, your co-host. I'm a lawyer and a dude.
And I'm your other co-host, Tommy Smurf. And I'm just a dude.